Hello and welcome to Pro Money Talk. I'm Jason Papier, and my co-host Peter Johnson is out at a conference, so I'll be doing it for the both of us today. It's been a while since we've had a show. We've had a lot of things going on. I think we mentioned in the last podcast that my wife was pregnant and we were expecting, and in fact, we have had a healthy, happy little boy, Finn, short for Finnegan Papier. I'm a big Mark Twain fan. And as those of you with children know, it takes a little bit of time. I took some time off work and away from the podcast and all my other extracurriculars for several weeks while my wife rested and healed. And then after that, just to spend time with the family. So apologize for being away for a while, but we're happy to be back. And we've got several shows in the can that we have ready to put out. On today's show, we're going to be talking to psychotherapist Margaret Cochran. And we'll be talking to Margaret about why people don't take care of their finances, why they put off taking care of their finances, and why they bury their heads in the sand, essentially. Of course, because of the fact that you're listening to this show, a lot of you may not have that problem. A lot of you may be very proactive with your financial planning. However, for each of us that is proactive with their financial planning, there are a score of people who aren't, and many of those may be people that are close to us, family members, friends, even spouses. So we hope that by listening to this show, you'll gain some tools and some insights that either will help you or will help you help somebody else. Now, before we get into the show, I want to remind you that you can find more information at promoneytalk.com. You can sign up for our mailing list. Those who sign up for our mailing list get emails when new shows come out. And we're hoping from time to time we'll get special offers as well. Of course, you can also contact us through the website. We receive lots of questions, and either Peter or myself will personally respond to each question. Some of the questions that we've been getting lately are back to basics type of questions. Got one this last week about asset allocation. The question was, what percentages make sense to put in the different asset classes? So equities, bonds, real estate, cash, commodities. What weightings do we give to each of those? I thought that was a great question, and I gave a fairly detailed response, but I think that it would be a great topic for a future show, and I'd like to hear our listeners' comments and see if that's something that they'd like to hear. We're also very comfortable with providing information on the particular assets that we use in the asset classes. So, for instance, which mutual funds we use for equities or bonds. So if that's something that might be of interest in a show, let us know, and we may make that a show topic. How to pick great mutual funds. Now, back to this show. Our guest is Margaret Cochran. Margaret is a psychotherapist with the Saratoga Family Health Center in Northern California. The issues that Margaret deals with run the gamut. However, one of the more common issues that she sees is individuals or couples having a lot of stress and a lot of anxiety over money issues. Oftentimes, that's because they haven't been responsible in dealing with their finances throughout the course of their lives. And as Margaret pointed out during the show, which was a great point, is that it's really never too late. But oftentimes people don't know why they're not making the decisions that they know they should be making. So for instance, why aren't they getting their life insurance? They know that they have children and a family that depends on them. They really need life insurance or estate planning. Why don't they do something with the investment that's sitting in a brokerage account and they haven't touched it in a couple of years, and they know that could be doing more, that the money could be working better for them, but they're not doing anything. So the question that I posed to Margaret was, why is it that so many people don't take control of their financial lives when it's such an important part of all of us? So Margaret points out some of the characteristics that each of us may have in ourselves relating to different areas of our life, whether it's finance or relationships or whatever it is, that keeps us from being as successful in that area as we could be. Of course, nobody's perfect, and most of us are going to be able to see something that Margaret talks about that we do. And once we recognize what it is that we do, we can improve. Obviously, again, in this context, it's about money, but it could also be about relationships. Margaret will point out during the show that we can be great at something and have the tools to do something very well, and we do it in one area of our lives, but we don't do it in other areas of our lives, even though it requires the same tools. Margaret has a personal crusade to educate people on a topic that she calls plenty versus paucity. In a nutshell, it's a way that we look at the world. Some people view the world as plentiful, meaning there's more than enough for everyone, and someone else's success is fantastic, and it's a very positive way of looking at things. And people who have the plentiful attitude seem to receive plenty as well. And others have an attitude of paucity, meaning there's only so much to go around, therefore I need to get mine and hold on to it. And people with that paucity mentality tend to hoard and not be particularly happy and to not get as much as they otherwise may get. So Margaret really sees the world divided into these two camps, and she sees a lot of people with paucity mindsets out there. And her crusade is to educate people that these two mindsets exist, and that and for people to be able to look inside themselves and see which one they have. And she feels that the world would be a much, much better place if more people came from a place of plenty. We'd be more supportive, more helpful, wealthier, more plentiful. We just touch on it for a bit on this show, but Margaret, it's something that Margaret talks a lot about in seminars. Margaret has her own podcast,
drcochran.org. That's drcochran.org. And her show is called A Mental Health Moment.
So if any of our listeners have the resources or have ideas in how Margaret can spread the word, please, I would encourage you to go on our website and contact us, and I will put you in touch with Margaret. And so without further ado, Margaret Cochran. Today on Pro Money Talk, we are going to welcome Margaret Cochran. Margaret works at Saratoga Family Health Center, and we are discussing why people don't address their financial planning needs. Thanks for joining us, Margaret.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Margaret, you and I were just chatting a minute ago, and you mentioned several reasons why people don't address their money issues. One of those was perfectionism.
Well, there are two real aspects to that. One is the notion of personal perfectionism, where I feel like it's not acceptable for me to make a quote-unquote wrong decision. I can't make a mistake, which is, of course, fallacious at best, because in order to have success, you have to be willing to risk failure. The other piece of perfectionism is I'm afraid that I won't look good in the eyes of my financial planner if I do this or that. So I'm terrified to go face them. So I do nothing.
Right. And that brings fear into the discussion. And there's quite a lot of issues that people have that are fear motivated. So getting back to personal perfectionism, one of the reasons that people don't have action is because they feel that if they're not going to do it perfect, they don't want to do it.
Yep, they'll do nothing at all. And it's really unfortunate because, of course, making mistakes is how we learn things. Being able to allow ourselves the luxury of making mistakes, in fact, embracing them, it's a huge learning tool. And it allows us to go forward and explore things we might not otherwise explore. Mistakes are some of the best teachers.
And a lot of the people who come in and see us have gained wealth, and they've done that by taking a chance and making mistakes.
Absolutely.
And learning.
Absolutely.
And yet when it comes to their money, they're afraid to do that.
And again, it's really unfortunate. I mean, I'm not suggesting that people say, oh, well, I can just do whatever I want and it's fine. You know, that's not an issue. It is. It does make a difference. But that doesn't mean that even with guidance, things aren't going to go quite the way you'd hoped.
Sure.
And again, that gives you direction for taking another kind of chance or looking at another kind of opportunity that you might not otherwise have explored.
And having a healthy respect for what can happen is certainly understandable and probably advantageous, but not doing anything probably does more harm in terms of the general population, from what I see, than people acting irrationally, because most of the people who walk in the door haven't done things. Right? It's rarely that someone comes walking through my door and they've been reckless and made a lot of mistakes. Mm-hmm. Most of the time they've made a couple mistakes and that's made them afraid and embarrassed, and now they don't want to do anything again.
Well, there's an interesting dynamic with regard to mistakes and money. And that is that somehow if I make a mistake, I'm going to lose it all. Mm-hmm. It's not that, you know, in any financial situation, there's some gamble. But life is a gamble. You know, every day we take risks. But somehow with money, if I go one direction and it either doesn't get me the return I expect, or I, oh God forbid, lose some, you know, right. That means that everything that I've done is called into question. You know, and I feel like everything that I have is suddenly at risk, and I become very afraid instead of saying, okay, well, this is how it went and that wasn't so good, and so I need to pick myself up and do something else.
So you touched on one aspect of fear of doing something wrong. But fear is a big subject, and it has a lot of tentacles that touch people.
Yes, absolutely.
One of the things that you'd mentioned when we were in my office was that people have a fear of seeing where they are. They don't want to look and see what their financial picture is.
Yeah, sometimes money and weight can be equated. Okay. A lot of people don't like to get on the scale because they don't want to see how much they weigh.
Right.
Or in some cases, with eating disorders like anorexia or bulimia, they don't want to see what they don't weigh.
Uh-huh.
Either direction. Okay. And people often treat their money the same way. I don't want to know. I don't want to know what's in the account. I don't want to know how much I've made or lost because I might have to do something different. And I'm absolutely terrified of that.
How can people see that in themselves? I mean, how can someone realize that they are falling into that trap and then get themselves out of that?
Well, the best way is to come see their financial planner. You know, when you find yourself avoiding your money, you need to go check in. The same thing is true, you know, with me as a psychotherapist. When my patients, for whatever reason they've come to me, find themselves avoiding something, that's the time when they'll say, oh, you know, I don't really need to go in. I don't need to talk to her this week. I'm really kind of okay. And that's when they get a phone call from me saying, where are you? What are you doing? Uh-huh. You know, what are you avoiding this week?
Right.
It's the same issue, you know.
The issues that they're avoiding lead them to avoid coming and seeing you, or
yep,
coming and seeing a financial planner as well.
Yes. Again, you don't want to get on the scale. You don't want to look at those numbers. You don't want to see what's there. Because you're afraid, and then, you know, I'll have to take an action or I'll have to do something different. And for whatever reason, sometimes people will choose predictable pain over uncertain pleasure. That's a very important thing to understand. In the realm of finances, that can do some pretty serious destruction.
Right. And I imagine in the realm of other things.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. That's true.
And part of the reason maybe that they avoid coming in is because they're afraid of what you're going to say or what their financial planner is going to say.
Yeah, it's interesting. With a number of different clients, when we deal with concerns about money, they'll say to me, oh, I'm afraid to go in and see my financial advisor. And I'll say, really, why? Well, because, you know, he or she's going to be mad at me because I spent this money or I didn't spend this money, or they told me to do something and I forgot, and then it didn't turn out well, and I'm going to be grounded.
Well, I hope all our clients are listening to this because I think that does happen sometimes. And I'll tell you, that's much like your business. I mean, we're here to support our
yes,
clients.
Absolutely.
We're not here to punish them.
I bet you've never once put a client in timeout, have you?
I've never set him in the corner with the dunce cap.
There
on.
You see.
What about, so we talked about the fear of facing mom and dad, mm-hmm, which is your financial planner, mm-hmm, or whoever. What about the fear of facing yourself or facing your spouse? You know, in other words, if you're a lot of times we take on roles in relationships, and maybe I'm the person who takes care of the money,
mm-hmm,
which is not how it should be. And please go back and listen to the show on financial intimacy to learn more about that. But if we fall into those roles, sometimes there can be an embarrassment or fear of telling the spouse where we really are. And so we don't want to look at it ourselves.
Yes, it's a very good point. And I particularly like your use of the word role. Because when you find yourself in a situation like that, you have become a role. You are no longer in a relationship. You're not in a relationship with your money, and you're not in a relationship with your spouse. You're all wrapped up in a role, and that's extremely dangerous. Okay, not only from a financial aspect, but also from the intimacy aspect with your partner.
Sure.
Okay. The things that people fight about the most are money, sex, and kids. Those are the big three. And frequently, those are things that people are uncomfortable talking about, even though they're extremely important in your life.
Right.
So as scared as we can be to go face our financial planner, we can also be frightened to go talk to our spouse, particularly if there are very divergent opinions about where money needs to go, how it needs to be allocated, and what's an important financial priority in the family.
They're afraid to have the discussion?
Absolutely. And I've seen some doozies, let me tell you.
I believe
you. Oh, man. It's amazing. People can get very heated. And often the money issues are translated into other things, like you're trying to control me, you're trying to take away from me, you don't want me to be happy.
How do people get past that?
Well, they come see me.
Right.
Or they come see you.
Okay.
It can be a pretty nasty sticking point. And depending on the severity of it, you know, sometimes we can go to our separate corners, if you will, and realize, oh, that was a silly discussion. You know, we really need to come back and look at that in a more rational way. Sometimes you do need a third party to sit down with you, you know, and kind of help sort through all this stuff. Mm-hmm. The other thing that's really important to consider when you're looking at any kind of important situation, but in this case, money, is which part of you is doing the talking? You know, inside all of us, we have what I affectionately refer to as the Greek chorus. All those voices in our head, you know,
right.
They are supposed to be there, by the way, so don't panic about that. But there are two main players in this particular drama, your adult self and your child self. Now, depending on how well those two parts of you talk, sometimes one or the other can be calling all the shots.
I see.
So let's say your child is the one who's been handling the money. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he's not been doing a particularly good job
right.
of it. He's been having a lot of fun. Okay. He's got a lot of toys, but, but the future's not been accounted for.
Right.
And all of a sudden your adult self kind of strolls in and says, oh my heavens, how did I get into this situation again?
Right.
And frequently it is again. Okay. Now, some people will say, well, you know, you're artificially separating the self. No, absolutely not. I'm not talking about two distinct separate personalities. I'm talking about facets of the self, okay? And depending on how we were raised and what kinds of issues that we had during that time, it's easier or more difficult for those two pieces to integrate. But it's extremely important when making decisions, whether it's parenting, whether it's about sex, or whether it's about money.
Wow, okay. So we have difficulty talking with ourselves, we have difficulty talking with our spouse, we have difficulty talking with our children, we have difficulty talking with our financial planners about money. All this...
What a mess.
What a mess. And all this fear and all this anxiety that it causes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And obviously that's not serving us well.
No. No. In fact, what it does is it creates... an environment of paucity.
Okay, explain that.
Well, the notion of paucity is one of there's not enough. There's not enough to go around. And I'm not going to be able to get enough, to have enough, to keep enough, to give enough. There's never enough. And when you get into that paucity place, sure enough, you don't have enough. It's exactly what you create for yourself. Even if you have money in the bank, you don't feel like you have enough. You can't enjoy it. You can't relax with it. And you don't have permission to share it with others.
And this idea of paucity and not sharing with others, it's how we look at ourselves.
Yes.
And what we think others are perceiving us as.
Yes. Yes. And also, it's interesting that not only is it an individual issue, but it then becomes a cultural issue, a world issue. You know, in our world economy, there's often this sense of not enough and this idea of paucity. If we decide, however, to have ourselves a nice little paradigm shift,
mm-hmm.
always good for a Friday afternoon,
right?
And we go to the side of plenty and we begin to believe that there is enough, that because someone else does well, it doesn't mean that I can't.
Right.
In fact, it's a model of how I can. There's a whole lot less to be afraid of and a whole lot more to enjoy.
Well, and even an intermediate step, I'll say as a financial planner, I address people all the time who come in and they're very fearful. I mean, I would say that it's probably the number one issue that people come in with, that they're afraid that they don't have enough money to whatever their goal is. Oftentimes it's for retirement.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's putting children through college or living a certain lifestyle or whatever it is. And people don't have the tools to be able to determine that for themselves.
Yes.
Both emotionally, mentally, but also literally having the tools to be able to determine that. And so part of what we do is sort of wealth counselors, if you will, mm-hmm. is to help them through that, to help them gather the information, to determine what information is relevant and what information might not be relevant, put it together using the skills that we've learned, and being able to present something to them that says, listen, given where you are and how you spend and what you have saved and all your circumstances and what your goals are, here's your chance of reaching those goals. And this is what it's going to look like, you know, year by year by year by year by year going out. 95% of the time, the client is absolutely fine.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if it's retirement, we can show them they have a real fear of, I'm not sure whether I can quit my job. I don't know that I have enough. I shouldn't be spending money. And then we can show them, listen, not only given the track that you're on, will you have enough money to last until you're 120, but you can also spend a little bit of extra money too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, some of it certainly is emotional and fear, but a lot of it's fear because people don't have the knowledge that they need to have.
Yes, and you've really done a very eloquent job, I think, of explaining why we often feel like your children.
Hmm.
Because you've just done what a good parent does, haven't you? You've said, okay, we need to look down the road. We need
right.
to think about what might come up, okay? And we need to look realistically at what we have in front of us. Now, if we don't know how to do that, then we have to go find somebody who can, okay?
Right.
But that feels very like being a child, because as children, we didn't know how to look to the future. We didn't know
sure.
how to plan ahead. We didn't have a lot in the way of judgment. So we would go to a trusted adult. Hopefully, there was a trusted adult
right.
who would guide us. So the trick is, as a client, we have to be able to trust you and allow you to guide us. And also remember that even though you have that wisdom, that it's not an issue of superiority.
Right.
It's an issue of guidance and trust. You are, to use a phrase, the loving parent, not the autocratic parent.
I try and be the loving parent. Now, that brings up another issue. I think we can probably talk for hours and hours today, but that brings up another issue, and that is that I think people are fearful of going to get help because they think, listen, I'm not a child, and as an adult, I should have these skills. I shouldn't have to go to someone to talk about this.
Yes. And again, I love your use of the word should. Shoulds just make you feel shitty. And that's never a good thing, ever a good thing. Should is a shame word. It kind of goes with must and ought.
Okay.
And the minute you say, I should blank, you won't.
Right.
Okay. And if you don't believe me, try this experiment. Okay. Maybe you're at home and you've got a load of laundry or something you need to do. So you say to yourself, I should do my laundry. You will not budge from the couch. You will not move and do that laundry.
You're hitting a little too close to home with that, Margaret.
If, on the other hand, you say, I need to do my laundry, or I want to do my laundry, or I have to do my laundry, you will get up off the couch, throw a load of laundry in, come back, watch TV or read a book. You'll manage it. Okay. Mm-hmm. But the difference between should and have to is one of ownership.
Okay.
Okay. And a feeling not of, oh, I'm such a loser that I need to do this. It's, yeah, I need to do this to take care of myself. I need to do this to feel good. And ultimately, I will have plenty if I do.
Perhaps the reason why we use should instead of I have to is because we realize that we don't, in some things, that we don't have the skills to address it. In other words, I should understand this. I should have be able to do this. But oftentimes people can't. They don't have the time. They don't have the resources. They don't have the energy. Maybe they just don't have, as hard as it is for us to admit, maybe we just don't have a particular talent in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And so we feel, instead of saying, I am going to do this, because maybe we know that we can't because we don't have the time or we don't have the skills or whatever reason, we say, I should do this. And now they should be able to handle their finances. And they don't.
Yes. And again, you bring up another very salient point. I hear this a lot. But doctor, I'm trying. I'm really trying. Okay? Watch out for that word, folks, because I'll tell you what, it's going to take you nowhere.
Okay.
Trying is trying to quit smoking or trying to lose weight. You're
right.
Not. It's extremely important when you're doing something that is meaningful and has real value for you that you pay attention to when you're doing it and when you're not.
Okay.
Trying is some nebulous place in between.
So we're either doing or we're not doing.
Exactly. Just like Yoda said, okay? So we're paying attention to our money. We're paying attention to where we're putting it, how we're using it, what it means to us, or we're not.
And if we're not,
that allows for course correction.
Right.
It's not a place of shame if we're not.
Okay.
That's a place of realization, taking stock, and saying, oh, I'm not. Is that what I want? Because life is not about rights or wrongs or shoulds or shouldn'ts. It's about, okay, who do I want to be? Where do I want to go? What do I want to have happen? Am I taking steps that take me closer to that or further away? And if I'm in a place of not, then I'm moving further away from my goal. Now, do I need to make a course correction and move back toward that goal, or do I need to change my goal? So that brings us all the way back around to the beauty of mistakes.
Right.
Okay, if we get to a not place, was that a mistake? Well, maybe, maybe not. Depends on how you look at it. But mostly, it's a place of reconsideration and the potential for redirection and either success in the original goal or setting up another goal that has more meaning for us.
And what role does the, in this case, the planner, or in your case, the doctor, have in helping people set those goals and having set realistic goals? I mean, we've seen good practices and we've seen bad practices. We've seen it over and over and over and over again. I'm talking about personal practices towards money,
uh-huh,
or how people invest or what people do. I think we have some, well, I feel we have some responsibility, but I think maybe that's one of the greatest things that we do provide is the ability to help people set realistic goals.
And a big part of being able to do that is understanding yourself and what you want. And I don't think this would surprise you because I'm sure you see it in the office all the time, but a lot of people don't really know what they want.
Right.
And often they don't have permission to achieve what they want.
Right.
And you'll hear them say things like, well, I'd really love to X, but I know that's not real. I could never do that. Or I could never have that. Or I could never go on that vacation. I mean, that's for rich people, right? Or that's for other people, not me.
And that's when we sit down and say, you know what? Let's write that as a goal.
Yes.
And we write down the goals. And then people aren't afraid to say the things that they've always wanted, but they can't do.
Yes.
Say, you know what? Let's just list that as a goal. There's no harm in just writing that down as a goal. And then what we can do is go through some of the planning techniques and see, maybe they can. And honestly, 80% of the time, some of that stuff, you know what, you can do that.
Yes.
And that's really empowering for people. It makes them feel good.
Yes. And it also makes you aware of what plenty means to you and how much is enough. Sometimes people have no boundaries about money.
Mm-hmm.
So they never get to feel satisfied. Because, in fact, boundaries create intimacy, whether it's with your partner or whether it's with your financial planning. Okay. Because if you understand who you are and what you want and what your abilities are, then you have something to direct where you want to go. And you can make all kinds of amazing stuff happen. But if you don't have those boundaries, then everything just becomes kind of a mush, you know, and you can get enmeshed with people or with dreams and find yourself going in a direction that you really don't like or you're not very proud of in the long run.
First of all, how do we recognize that in ourselves?
Yeah, well, the best way to do that really is to look at the fruits of your labors. When you're making decisions, when you're executing behavior, does it make you feel good about who you are? Are you proud of what you're doing? Are you giving and acquiring an equal measure? And if you're pleased with those kinds of things, then you're probably achieving your goal quite well. But if you find that the answer to those questions is no a lot, no, I'm not very happy with this, you know, something else is going on. And some of that you may need to address with your financial planner. Sometimes it may be a symptom of something else that you may need to see a psychotherapist about. Sometimes, depending on our backgrounds, where we've come from, certain experiences we've had, we carry that silently within us. And we don't even know it's there until we act it out by living a life of paucity, of not planning for our future, of not thinking about what we have and enjoying it or sharing it or bequeathing it or whatever we want to do. We don't feel permission to do that.
And for all the listeners out there, I can't help you with that. you need to see Margaret with that for that. But you mentioned something that I hadn't thought of before, but you hit the nail on the head. You talked about, well, superstition, the idea of jinxing it. A lot of us go through life and we're doing well and we're happy. We're making money or having families and doing these things. And you're just fearful that this could end one day.
Yes.
You know, one day this could just all end. And if I don't address, you know, what's going on, then it'll never end. You know, the idea, if I don't fill out, If I don't get life insurance, then I won't die. If I don't do financial planning, then I won't have money problems.
Yeah, and that doesn't take you very far.
It doesn't.
But you're absolutely right. You know, if I don't deal with it, you know, maybe then it won't happen, and somehow magically is the operative word here.
Right.
I'll be okay. But I think there's another point there at another level that's kind of significant, and that is that human beings often get very wrapped around the axle about trying to control things they can't control.
Very
the
good.
The only thing any of us has any control over is ourselves. I can't control the stock market.
No.
I can't control...
Neither can I, unfortunately.
Doggone it. I was hoping you could. I can't control my neighbor. I can't control my children.
Right.
Okay? But what I can control is my response to those things.
Right.
My willingness to react, my willingness to accept responsibility for my behavior and make change or embrace success. That I have, you have, we all have ultimate control over. So you don't need to knock on wood. You don't need a rabbit's foot. You just need to remember that, yeah, you do control the most important thing, yourself. And as a result, you can make course corrections and changes and rework your priorities anytime you want to or need to.
What I find really interesting is that, you know, we're talking about people who come in to see me and people, frankly, who come in to see you at the Saratoga Family Health Center who are pretty wealthy. And sometimes that comes from families or just sheer dumb luck. But oftentimes, again, it comes from them being successful at whatever it is they do. And so we can be really successful in one area and yet not successful at all in another area.
Absolutely. And again, you bring up such a good point. Boy, you have good points today.
Well, thank you.
Good job for you. And that is that often we see our skills as isolated rather than globalizing our learning. For example, I might see in my practice a trial attorney who can't talk to his wife. He talks all day.
Right.
To juries and judges and, you know, but he doesn't know how to talk about his inner world. And he forgets that he has the skills in his repertoire to be able to do that. He just doesn't apply them to a different situation.
I think that just by the fact that people are listening, they've taken a huge step. Okay, they've taken the step towards, I want to learn and I want to make positive change. So our listeners have already overcome a huge hurdle. A hurdle that they may still have, some of them, is that maybe they're not in a place where they can hire a financial planner or a psychotherapist. So they do feel like they need to do it themselves, and they may need to. What can we do besides continuing to discuss these things and opening up the conversation for people? What can we provide the listeners to help them help themselves?
Well, I think the most important aspect of that is that frequently, because we're afraid, we stop looking. And you know, for almost every problem, there's an answer. But sometimes you have to dig under rocks a little bit, you know, and hunt around. And while it may seem that there is, if you'll forgive the word, a paucity of resources where you are, there may be some things you haven't thought of yet.
Right.
Some places that you haven't looked. And there's always someone who knows someone who knows someone. And you need to keep asking those kinds of questions. And there are very few places in the country where you can't find an accountant, somebody to help you at least, you know, kind of figure out where you are, and someone who may be able to advise you at least a little bit about taxes. And there's probably a lawyer somewhere nearby who can kind of get you started thinking about, you know, estate planning. And frequently that person knows financial planners because they've worked with them before.
Right.
So...
so that may just be another excuse that we give ourselves for not acting.
And that's true, again, in many different facets of our life. If we're afraid of something, we don't look too far. You know, we'll look a couple inches ahead and say, oh, it's not there, so I guess I can't have it. But if you maybe look another couple of inches past that, oh, there it is. I guess I can have it. But we're back again to that issue of paucity versus plenty. If I believe that the world is a place of plenty, that the universe is a place of plenty, I can have. It's okay for me to have. If I'm stuck in that paucity cycle, generation, you know, our grandparents and great-grandparents often suffered through the Great Depression.
Right.
And it was very, very difficult for them to recover from that mindset of, you know, I remember my grandmother would save aluminum foil.
Right.
She, you know, you couldn't recycle that or anything. You had to, you know, fold it up very neatly and put it in the drawer.
Right.
Because there might not be foil at the store next time, you know.
Sure.
And even though rationally she knew that wasn't so, emotionally she was so tied to that. So again, we're back to that balance between your adult and your child, your intellect and your feelings. And if those two are not working in tandem, you're not going to look for those resources that may seem to not be there.
And much of the money these days and much of the wealth of the country and many of the clients that we all see, you and I both, come from the baby boomer generation. And of course, the people who modeled the behavior for the baby boomer generation are what we now call the greatest generation. And that is the people who've been through the Depression and been through the wars and have those emotional things. And so they modeled that behavior for the baby boom generation. And now the baby boom generation, we see on one hand, oftentimes people being very frugal. And on the other hand, we see people
live for today. And many baby boomers are shocked that they live past 30.
Right.
Because that was the cry of that generation, you know, don't trust anyone over 30.
Right.
And, you know, we're never going to get there. We're going to live the sex, drugs, and rock and roll lifestyle. But by golly, we did. So those of us who have existed past 30, you know, we've got some planning to do. And there are a lot of people, as you well know, in catch-up situations now.
Right.
And sometimes those folks get really scared and think, I can never catch up. There will never be enough. But that's not necessarily true. There are ways to deal with that. And coming to someone like you is crucial.
Well, and Peter's got a segment on the show that he's starting now that is success stories. And it deals a lot with that. And it is a lot of times the baby boomer generation. And it is people who got themselves in trouble living for today or making bad decisions. And later in life were able to do things that enabled them to catch up, enabled them to dig themselves out of these holes and to be successful and to reach their goals. And I think it's pretty inspiring to those to those people who feel that they may not be able to get themselves out of a hole. Mm-hmm. So that's a segment that is
Sounds
coming
great.
Up. And yeah, I think it'll be great.
Sounds great.
Well, Margaret, thanks a lot for being on the show. And obviously, this is going to be the first of hopefully many conversations, as our listeners could tell, just in keeping it focused on this one small topic about why people don't address their planning needs, we could literally go on for hours and hours. And you and I had, well, maybe more, I had a little bit of difficulty coming up with the topic because there's so many great topics for us to
There's a lot of breadth out there. Absolutely.
So thanks again, and we'll look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you for having me. It was a great pleasure.
Excellent. So that's our show for today. I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you, more importantly, you learned something, and maybe about yourself, or maybe learn to identify some traits in others that are close to you, whom you can help. Feel free to pass this podcast, obviously, along to anybody who you think can benefit from it. I think that a lot of people can benefit from it. And if they recognize some of the issues that Margaret and I talked about that keep them from making a positive change in their financial lives, well, perhaps this show can help them recognize that, and that recognition can lead to some action. Again, Margaret's trying to get the word out about plenty versus paucity. And although we just touched upon it on this show, you can hear her talk more about it on her own podcast
at drcochran.org. That's drcochran.org.
And as I mentioned at in the intro, if you have any contacts or suggestions for how Margaret might use a platform to get that message across to more people, it would be greatly appreciated. And I will happily pass any information along to her if you email us, and you can do that through our website, promoneytalk.com. Thanks again for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. And until next time, here's to your success.